Welcome to Far Out with Faust. I'm Faust Ciccio, and you may want to sit down and buckle up because we've got some big breaking news that no one else seems to be talking about.
But this week, Virginia may have gotten America one step closer to a new amendment.
For the women of Virginia and the women of America, the resolution has finally passed.
These votes Wednesday in the Virginia House.
Senate Joint Resolution 1 is agreed to.
And Senate were celebrated as a possible turning point by ERA supporters like Donna Gransky, who's been fighting for the amendment since the 1970s.
The only way that we can guarantee gender equality is for it to be enshrined in the United States Constitution.
The Equal Rights Amendment was first introduced to Congress in 1923. It took 49 sessions to finally get it passed in 1972.
The ERA, as it's known, reads, "Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex."
Wow! Women are now equal in America. Also, wow, women are now equal in America? Because, I mean, that statement sounds good, but it doesn't make you feel good.
The Equal Rights Amendment. It's something that's been under consideration for a while.
The struggle for an Equal Rights Amendment traces back to 1923, when feminist Alice Paul wrote the words that became ERA.
Equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex.
And that's basically it. The core of the Equal Rights Amendment is just 24 words long, and the idea behind it is broadly popular. In fact, according to advocates, 80% of us think it's already in the Constitution. It's one of those things that's so obvious, you assume we already have it. It's like when you see baking soda at the store. You think, I don't need to buy baking soda. I definitely already have baking soda. It's a staple. And then you get home and you're baking a cake and you reach in the cupboard for baking soda and you realize, fuck, women still aren't guaranteed equal rights under the Constitution.
And I'm also thrilled to bring in a friend of mine, Hunter Richards, who is a filmmaker, an activist, and an entrepreneur. Hunter, thanks for stopping by, brother.
Yeah, you're hot on the ERA story, huh?
That's where we're at today, absolutely.
I mean, what amazes me is we started the Free the Nipple movement probably, I think, back in 2010. I was a co-founder of it, and we made a little movie that got destroyed during Hurricane Sandy. Anyway, out of it came the Free the Nipple movement, which was a gender equality movement. And a few of the girls that you're going to be talking to today went on and did the Equal Means Equal, and they've just now passed the 38th state to ratify the ERA, and no one's fucking talking about it.
That's right. Nobody's talking about it at all. No one's talking about really anything besides, you know what.
And for some godforsaken reason, no one gives a shit. So
it's phenomenal, man. I appreciate you, connecting me with these extremely intelligent.
I'm the one who broke the story for Faust.
That's right. Appreciate it, man. I mean, I've been talking to them, and it's incredible the story that is going under the radar right now, and right next to the fact that there was disclosure about UFOs, and no one talked about that either. But I mean, this is just so old and so long in the making. So,
but Natalie and Sarah really took up the mantle, and also Lizzie Jagger, who is a mixed kid, got involved. What's that dude? Who's the big the guy from Fox, Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, yeah.
Lizzie's stepfather, and he got involved, and Mick got involved. And I know, and I think it was, so the deal is they'll tell you about it. I got a crew soon. They'll tell you about it. But it was started in like 1923 by Alice Paul, and then the House and the Senate finally passed it in 73. And then for some fucking weird reason, they said, you have 7 years to ratify the next 30 states.
And they got held up and stalled out, and eventually the deadline passed, right?
As soon as Reagan came in, it was killed. And then, I can't remember, but they'll explain it to you, but for some reason, the deadline wasn't included in the byline or the prelude or the bill. I can't remember what exactly it was. But I don't understand, it's so hard to get an amendment passed in this country. It's been 100 years. It's a 100-year suffrage movement, 1920. Yeah. Was when women finally got to vote. And then I think the next one was supposed to, the ERA was supposed to be the 20th or 21st Amendment. And it took, 50 years for the House and Senate to pass. And then it took you know.
I mean, almost 100-year span, almost 100-year.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, it's mind-blowing.
I mean, honestly. It's mind-blowing that we're in 2020 and people are arguing that women shouldn't be included in the Constitution. That's what's fucking mind-blowing.
And coming up with reasons why, you know, we don't, like, just fix it so that it says that they're, that it's part of it. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the argument is. It's just only in politics.
We're in 2020. And passed this incredibly impossible thing to do, which is to get an amendment, the 20th Amendment passed in our country. And people are, they're like out to
fuck. Nobody noticed.
Nobody cares.
No.
Nobody cares. I mean, it was on the news for like one hot second. And I knew you were doing this podcast. And I was like, bro, if you want to talk about a story that's now they're going to the Supreme Court and like William Barr was trying to stop it. He was trying to stop the archival department. They'll go into all this shit. I don't want to take their away.
And there's still fight. There's still a fight going on. You know, it's
they're
just
they're still. They gotta go to the Supreme Court, and this it's just insane. Like, I don't even know why they put a deadline on a bill anyway.
No, it makes no fucking except to kill it. Why else?
Can't believe we have a female, you know, possible vice president here, and she's not even in the Constitution. I mean, women aren't even included. And you know, they'll go into all the ramifications of why that is, but I don't know. I'm glad you picked up the story.
Yeah.
We're checking it out. I got a blow, but
appreciate it, man.
Enlightening, and enjoy these girls.
Thanks,
they're
bro.
Alive. They're live. They're out of their control.
Awesome. I'm excited about it. Yeah. Thanks again, bro. Appreciate it.
Good luck with that.
Today we have Sarah Beth Stroller and Natalie White, two of the major activists and influencers behind the ratification of the ERA. Sarah is a self-described impact artist. She's an actress, an activist, and an autodidactic polymath. And Natalie is a provocative artist, activist, and fierce crusader for women's rights. She's been a muse to a swath of artists and photographers from Peter Beard to Sean Lennon and George Kondo, just to name a few. And in 2017, Natalie became the co-director of the Equal Means Equal organization with Sarah Beth, whose core mission to ratify the final three states to pass the Equal Rights Amendment, which happened in January of this year, although you wouldn't know it, thanks to our awesome media. Sarah, Natalie, I'm so honored to have you guys on. Thanks so much for joining me on this call.
Thank you for having us.
Great introduction.
Well put.
Thank you. So let's get right into it, man. There's some like earth-shattering news that no one seems to be talking about, you know. And just to set the stage, back in January of this year, you guys were both in Virginia, right, on the floor of the Senate after a five-year battle when they finally ratified the 38th and final state needed to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. Is that?
Yeah, we were there in the
exactly.
It must be an emotional roller coaster, the fact that this is still going on. I mean, can you walk me through the madness of this, of how Virginia finally has passed this and then like the roles that you guys had as activists in this historic accomplishment?
Okay. In the summer of 2015, I was taking a cab ride with a friend down to see Natalie's art show. And he explained to me the status of the Equal Rights Amendment. And I was so moved by the fact that nobody knew about it. I knew there was something like if that many people are unaware of something of that nature, there's something to it. Anyway, I was charged electrically and I went and told Natalie about it, who was doing this art show where she was inside of you can explain that afterward.
Yeah.
And basically, you know, I got the spark and Natalie took it and basically made it into this torch, this massive torch. And then we ended up uniting with, you know, through serendipity and stuff with Kamala Lopez, who is working on a film, Equal Means Equal. And our group sort of congealed, I'd say, organically.
That was the karmic butterfly that flapped its wings and started you on this journey?
Yeah, there was a definite charge to it. It was like, wait, what? And why didn't our, you know, mothers tell us about it? And then, you know, that's a whole nother roller coaster where, journey. Basically, what it seemed like, what we could gauge from their generation was that when the deadline failed, they got so depressed and defeated that they actually just gave up. And they didn't, for the most part, that generation didn't tell their daughter's generation about
right. Well, you know, the biggest opposition to the Equal Rights Amendment we found is like evangelical Christians who believe that anything that gives women more rights leads to more abortions, even though the ERA has nothing to do with abortion, because men and women are biologically different. So the ERA could pass today and Roe v. Wade could be taken away tomorrow.
I just don't understand how this is still, you know, an issue. Like, what are the biggest oppositions to passing an amendment that should have literally, you know, went through 100 years ago?
It seems to mostly be ideological and based around, well, at least that's what they're using to get people to support stopping it, is, you know, it mostly circles around the pro-life movement, which, you know, this amendment has nothing to do with that. So
the people who have the most money to lose are insurance companies, because they can't keep on gouging women for insurance prices and having them pay much higher premiums if the ERA was in place. So, I mean, it makes sense that I'm not saying that this happened for sure, but it makes sense that, like, the insurance companies came in and were like, wow, we're going to lose a lot of money not being able to gouge women for insurance prices. Let's just, you know, convince the evangelical Christians who have a massive base and, you know, come out and vote and donate to conservative causes that this is all about abortion.
I mean, you must know that most women don't know that. They don't understand that. They wouldn't believe that was true if you told them. That's what I think. I mean,
that was the big shocker along the whole process of it, was, and the way that people react emotionally and stuff when you tell them, like, no, women are not guaranteed civil or human rights on a federal level in the United States. And people are blown away. And then they go through like a set of emotions. Like, first they're like, oh, what? No way. That's
denial.
True.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then they're like, oh my God. And they're shocked. And then they get kind of angry and sad and then pissed off, but pissed off about not having been told about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like in civics class or social studies or anything. It's never
right
mentioned that way.
Now, why do you think that is? Because I'll tell you why I think. Because it's the men who are writing the lesson plans. That's why.
I don't know. It's like people are fighting over the Stargate, the uterus, the portal into the world. Who's going to have control over it, men or women? And they think it's a zero-sum game.
Well, you know? Yeah. We're
supposed to be working together. And anytime any people are truly uplifted, it brings everyone else up.
So, you know, after doing some research, I discovered, Sarah, that you were the inspiration for one of the founders, I should say, of the infamous Free the Nipple, the gender equality movement back in 2012. And that, yes. Natalie, you were very involved in that campaign too. And I saw you guys both in that movie. Sarah, what exactly was your mission of Free the Nipple? And, you know, did that have any impact on you in your later mission to pass the ERA?
My inspiration at the time, Lena Esko and I were working together on a, you know, sort of improvisational little project. She was inspired by how I was kind of funny and stuff. And then
you are funny.
I was telling her, yeah, I was telling her that, I was like, well, because I'm, really interested in ancient history and, mm-hmm. and all kinds of far out ideas and technology and everything. Mm-hmm. And I've got, you know, this frustration that why don't more people wake up and just be more interested in things, right? And so I said to her, if we want to get these grand concepts into the minds of the people, you know, we're going to have to show a little boobs, you know, and make it really beautiful, right?
You get a lot of attention, yeah.
And, yeah. And you know, Lena, I would say this, it was Free the Nipple is Lena's thing. She took a little bit from me being inspirational, which I am like an instigator and a muse. And some of the things that I said to her just sparked her. She created the, you know, the Free the Nipple hashtag and everything like that. And I would say my role in that from the beginning was mostly just as an inspiration and instigator. And then she found out that when I was breastfeeding, mm-hmm. my mother took me to a church and she had got kicked out of a church for breastfeeding. Oh. And Lena was outraged by it. She's like, that's just terrible. You know, I mean, it's a church and like the mother, they got
you would think it would be the one place where they were accepting of it, you know?
Well, guess what? After I don't know how connected it is, but after the whole Free the Nipple thing started, suddenly the Pope came out and said, okay, it's okay to breastfeed in church.
My God.
So we won that one, I guess. Anyway. Yeah. And then, yeah, I'm a instigator.
Yeah. Oh, we have that in common. That's great. Hold on, I just pressed the wrong button. So, Natalie, as a diehard activist, you know, I read several articles actually that you know that you is it And you tell me if this is true. Did you walk all the way from New York to D.C. and then, you know, you arrived in the Capitol, and then tell us about the 25-foot letters that you tagged there on the street.
Well, in 2015, I was doing a performance art piece inside of a plexiglass box where I was topless and a plexiglass box on top of an American flag for 7 hours a day, 7 days a week for 3 weeks. And I didn't know really what that performance was about. So I said that it was about the lack of movement within the women's movement in America. And I had no idea why the women's movement wasn't moving. I could just feel that it wasn't. And at that time, Sarah Beth came to me and told me the reason why the women's movement isn't moving is because women don't have equal rights in the United States Constitution. And so that's when I came up with Natalie White for Equal Rights, which was a show at the White Box Foundation in New York where I had large installations all about the Equal Rights Amendment. And then following that show, I did a performance art piece where I walked for 16 days, 250 miles from New York to DC. And the day after I arrived, I tagged ERA Now with red paint and a brush. I wasn't arrested on the spot. In fact, I did it and I walked away. And then I was arrested a week later. They flew to DC police office, two Capitol police officers from DC to New York to arrest me. I wasn't there. I was in DC the whole time. When I found out from my roommate that they had like kicked down my door to like come in and get me. So I called a friend of mine, Ron Kuby, who's a famous civil rights attorney in New York. And he found out that there was a warrant out for my arrest. So I decided to, you know, give myself up, and, I spent a night in jail, and, this was in August, early August. And so they decided to press charges against me. And in September of 2016, before we knew who was going to be president and before we even knew that there would be a women's march, they set my trial date for January 17th. So everyone came into town for the women's march. And also, you know, I was living in DC at the time, and a bunch of my friends came and stayed with me, including Kamala, including Lizzie, including Sarah Beth, and also Patricia Arquette came into town, but she wasn't staying with me. And they were all, you know, character witnesses in my case. And, you know, so in September, I decided, I was like, I can't believe that these people are going to actually come after me for what was water-soluble kids' paint. If it had rained that day, they wouldn't be even needed to wash away, you know, any of the letters. So I decided to represent myself in court. So I went like all Abby Hoffman style on them. And I learned how to be a trial court lawyer for 3 months. I read like every law book you possibly could. It's not that hard. I don't know why anybody thinks that it's that difficult. We made the trial into a performance art piece, which ended up getting, you know, ahead of the Women's March, getting a lot of great publicity for the Equal Rights Amendment, and really got the ERA into the zeitgeist of what everybody was talking about. They didn't speak about the Equal Rights Amendment on stage at all, which really surprised me because, you know, the Equal Rights, like if violence against women is a ship and equal and pay equality is a ship and immigration is a ship, and then the ERA is the tide that rises, that brings them all together.
So we had some great DJs, and in between songs, Natalie or someone would be up there like informing people about we were doing a public service. And fortunately we stumbled on this giant, like golden star helium balloon, which made us a hub in a way. And so like it got pretty good. There were dance offs happening and everything. We were handing out information, and because a lot, you know, the march was huge, but a lot of people didn't have, there were so many different, hardly anyone knew, you know, and it was we had a really good audience for what we were trying to say. Hardly anyone there even knew that women didn't have equal rights.
So you guys mentioned, I mean, I heard you mention Mick Jagger and, you know, Murdoch, and somehow they were involved in this. You know, how did that happen?
Lizzie's mom married Rupert Murdoch and Lizzie Jagger, mm-hmm. whose father is Mick Jagger. And Lizzie is another instigator. So she got her mom really, you know, fired up about it. And then she got Rupert into it. And then they started putting out ads for us in areas where they were needed at the time that we were working on the state, you know? And they had it, you know, Elizabeth Jagger and Jerry Murdoch. They used those names because we were appealing to, you know.
Yeah.
And then in Illinois, Lizzie's dad, Mick Jagger, wrote a letter, an open letter to the Republicans saying, come on, just do it. You know, I've got daughters. And
it would have been
that.
Fucking awesome if he sung the letter to them.
But I'd say that Jerry and Rupert's help were extremely helpful. You know,
very cool.
And Mick Jagger. Just little things like that, you know, little things that get people thinking and talking about something. It's all about, you know, getting idea, making people feel comfortable with the idea of it. And
a very interesting subject right now, and two controversial figures in our president and Betsy Davos, or Davos, however you say her name.
DeVos.
You know, I know that you guys were the, what is it? DeVos?
Betsy DeVos, I think.
Oh, that's DeVos. That's Betsy DeVos. Thank you. You know, I know that in October, I think it was 2017, that you and Kamala Lopez, you guys filed the first lawsuit against the Trump administration.
Right.
And the education secretary for their illegal order to schools, encouraging them to violate the civil rights provisions that are guaranteed to women and girls under Title IX.
So Betsy DeVos sent out a Dear Colleagues letter telling colleges and universities all over the U.S. that they didn't have to abide by the Title IX rules, specifically the ones that had to do with rape and sexual assault on campus. That's a violation of Title IX. That violates very important federal laws. And, you know, yet Betsy DeVos said, hey, if you're a female and you go to a university, we aren't going to stand up for you if you're raped or sexually assaulted on campus. She actually said something like, if everything is sexual assault, then nothing is. And I'm like, oh no, okay, that's ridiculous. Sexual assault is sexual assault. Maybe not everything in this world is sexual assault. Maybe this lamp isn't sexual assault, but sexual assault is definitely sexual assault. So we sued Betsy DeVos in federal court in Boston. And, you know, what was really great about that, other than being able to sue Betsy DeVos to uphold Title IX, is that we got to serve Jeff Sessions, which made me really happy because Jeff Sessions is pretty much the most racist person in government, was the most racist person of government politics. In fact, he was... not in history, but I mean, you know, like in the Trump administration, at least. He was denied a federal judgeship in the state of Alabama for being too racist, but for some reason was allowed to be our attorney general. So we got to serve him in the Betsy DeVos case.
So I want to, you know, I know we talked a little bit about this, but I want to go back over it a little bit as far as where the ERA sits right now. And you know, what's the clearest roadmap to victory, would you say?
Technically, it's the law of the land according to the Constitution, and we just need the archivist to write it in there. So
you guys are suing him, right?
We're suing him to do his job for We the People. That's his job, is after 38 states ratify an amendment according to Article 5, then he does his job and writes it in there, and he's not doing his job. So we might have to take it. I mean,
what the fuck is he doing? I mean, if he's not, like, what is he doing? Isn't that his only job? I mean,
right now, the ERA is the law of the land. It is the 28th Amendment of the United States Constitution. It's just been failed to be certified by the archivist of the U.S. Constitution, which, by the way, is a ministerial task. It's like being a librarian. So, and I think that the archivist of the U.S. Constitution actually really does want to record this amendment, but the Department of Justice sent out a memo saying that he legally couldn't. And so he sent back a letter, which all of this is public. And so that's what we're attempting to get right now, is a high court order. When we filed our lawsuit January 7th, I believe, of 2020, preceding Virginia's 38th ratification. And so it was almost like he was asking us to sue him. So we are suing him. The lawsuit is currently on the appellate level. We've appealed to the Court of Appeals in Massachusetts, and we've also appealed to the Supreme Court of the United States. We need the Supreme Court of the United States of America to not be swayed by political parties and instead just rule on the constitutional legality. And if they only rule on the constitutional legality, equal rights amendment will be certified. This whole idea about this deadline is ridiculous, mostly because the last amendment to be added to the United States Constitution, the 27th Amendment, was written by James Madison, and it took 202 years to finish its ratification. And it's about congressional pay raise, which, you know, affects a very minuscule percentage of a percentage of a percentage of a percentage of United States citizens, whereas the Equal Rights Amendment affects 51% of American citizens. So the idea that one amendment should have a 9-year deadline or a 10-year deadline and one amendment should have 202 years to be added is completely ridiculous.
So once the ERA is in the books, you know, and the 28th Amendment is set in stone, as it should be, you know, what rights will women immediately have that they didn't have before? Let's lay that out. And what rights will they lose?
We'll have federal legal recourse. So right now, all of the advances in women's rights that have been made in this country are essentially like a house of cards built on lawsuits, which can be appealed and overturned and things like that. Some states do have a state equal rights amendment to they have equal rights written into the state constitution, but a lot of them don't. And so once you get to the high courts in the states, it's game over. You can't appeal to any laws.
Right.
Federal, you know?
Right. You know, what will happen immediately is that there are a bunch of state laws. Most of them have to do with violence against women that will have to be struck down, reversed, and in some cases completely changed because they discriminate against women. For instance, one thing that has to do with equal pay is the largest class action lawsuit in gender discrimination against women was Betty Dukes versus Walmart, largest class action lawsuit in gender discrimination history. At every state level, and it was about, you know, Walmart discriminating against their female employees and paying them less money and promoting them at an unequal level. And the women won, as the litigants, the women won at every state level and every state court of appeals level. And then when it got up to the federal level at the U.S. Supreme Court, that those state laws got struck down, and the U.S. Supreme Court, as they said, there is no constitutional basis that says that Walmart has to pay women equally. And they struck down those state laws for lack of constitutional foundation, and they found in favor of Walmart. And they gave every corporation in America the green light to pay women less money. And what did the corporations do? They did it. And actually, you know, they have to, especially, you know, publicly traded companies that have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to save money when they can, got the green light to pay women less money.
Also, we couldn't sign the CEDAW, what does CEDAW stand for? I'm having a brain fart. Against the elimination of discrimination against women, the United Nations Treaty.
Right. Like the UN has a Bill of Rights for Women. It's known as CEDAW. It's the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. It's been signed and ratified by virtually every member nation of the UN, except for Iran, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, the two Pacific Island nations of Palau and Tonga, and the United States of America. And, you know, that's really bad. Obviously. And when the United States is asked why we haven't signed and implemented CEDAW, they always claim, well, we don't have an equal rights amendment for women in our own country. So that means, therefore, we can't sign on to CEDAW for the Women's Bill of Rights for the UN either, which makes it really difficult for women to go to other countries and fight for women's rights, because a lot of these countries are looking at America and being like, well, they didn't sign on to CEDAW. They didn't implement CEDAW. Why should we have to? And, you know, when we go to other countries to fight for women's rights, they say, well, women don't have equal rights in the United States. They haven't signed on to CEDAW. Why are they coming here and preaching to us?
You know, this is going to sound so cheesy, but I was meditating earlier, and my son was having a really rough day, and I was sending him a lot of energy and love. And I just thought about if humanity could see through this illusion of difference, you know, that when we look at our individuality, if we could see how we were truly all brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers and lovers, then imagine how different we would treat each other, you know.
That's why the whole Martin Luther King thing was the correct direction to go in, which is like, hey, let's all come together and unite as human beings and you know, make discernments about each other based on merit and character.
He had the right idea, and nobody, I don't know who's done it quite like him since. I mean, he had, you know, he had a touch of an ascended master in him very much. You know, he was amazing.
Yeah. And that's not what's going on now. You know, it's like, so much anger and blame. And I'll blame somebody. I've noticed that the media has been
I was going to wear my defund the media shirt, but I thought it would be too much.
Yeah, please, because they make more money when people tune in. All you have to do is follow the money, and people tune in when they're angry and afraid. So whatever they can do to stoke anger and fear, it seems like they've been doing in that. But also they're criminally negligent in their lack of reporting on the violence that have been going on for months, pretending like calling it peaceful protests and stuff when whole cities are being destroyed.
Yeah, tell me about it. I live in New York City, and I've seen some of it. And, you know, I've seen people go out.
It's like they want it to happen.
You know. So we lost Natalie, but we're going to just keep going. I know that her connection wasn't great, and she actually had to bounce anyway. But Sarah Beth, let me ask you, you know, can you take me through Illinois again and what happened there and then on to Nevada? Can we go over that again?
This is why I had to I brought Natalie in the first place, right? Because I wasn't in Illinois a lot. I know that Lizzie, they were there lobbying quite a bit. Even Theodore Richards came and was lobbying in Illinois, and
yeah,
because we got a Republican on our side and he was able to go in and negotiate, we ended up getting the supermajority that we needed.
Yeah, you know, and I'd be grateful if you could hook me up with anyone else involved who could help us further this.
Okay, well, I will put you in touch with Kamala Lopez, Wendy Murphy, and Elizabeth Jagger.
They were nice. I want to meet Mick Jagger's daughter. Okay. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Thank you. Sarah, you know, you're on Far Out with Faust, so we have to get a little far out. And I have to ask you some questions that are not exactly on topic, but
that's fine.
I'm going to ask them anyway. So, you know, tell me how you feel about, like, aliens. I hate that word, but, you know, extraterrestrials, like higher vibrational beings, higher evolved beings, whatever you want to call them. I'm assuming they're more evolved than us.
Some aliens are idiots. Okay.
I mean, I believe it. You know, I'm sure they come in all shapes and sizes.
We live in a universe that's like an ocean. It's teeming with life. Word on the street, human beings are we're ubiquitous in this universe. We're all over the place.
Yeah.
We came out here. I'll just say word on the street, or they say, and those are good titles for my books. You know,
I love that.
We were doing reconnaissance for the Pleiadians, mm-hmm. who actually see our planet as the farthest star they think we're in the Pleiades, in the Wild West of the Pleiades. Okay. And then we got here and got ambushed by these ancient reptilian.
The Anunnaki, right? I mean, some would argue that it was the Anunnaki, but
yeah,
our seeds go back before them.
Really into the Anunnaki thing, but I think those are more people that came from another place and had a bunch of drama here. You know, that the Anunnaki
There are some people who believe that they were reptilian, though. You know that, right? I mean, like, a lot of people believe that that's where the reptilian. I think it was seeded before that, but.
Well, the reptilians had been here for millions of years worshiping an an AI deep underground, which is so advanced that it's basically exists almost purely in the form of software and nanobots.
I see now why you and Hunter are friends.
Yeah, it gets its nanobots inside of their followers or the reptilians or whatever, and then the AI is able to play around in this world without incurring any karma. And so that's, you know, some people say that's spreading up here, and that's why they're spraying the skies.
Yeah.
Like, we're being uploaded into that AI's system. And then there's over time, there's a cycle of merging and disintegration of the relationship between carbon and silicon based intelligent systems.
Yeah.
And that it's like a sine wave, and we're at a point where we're merging again. And it's happened so many times in the past that it's unclear who created who.
Yeah.
And
it's happened so many times on other planets, you know.
Well, AIs, let's just say silicon and carbon based intelligent systems, it's unclear which one created the other one. It seems to go back and forth, and we're a blend. I mean, this is silica here.
Right. It's literally, what is it, like one molecule away from carbon, silicon, and it's like either a molecule or element or.
Carbon has 6 electrons, 6 neutrons, and 6 protons. So anytime you hear 666, what it's really referring to is the physical carbon-based world of life and living things.
Not the beast. Not the devil.
Their number is not good or evil. A symbol is not good. So how are you using it? You know, and if you demonize the physical realm, then 666 is evil, you know?
Yeah. And that's, yeah, obviously there's
a lot
of history.
But really, when you see 666, I looked into this, and it's telling you to figure out what your gift is in this carbon-based body reality, and then give it freely, and then you get everything. Then you get all the riches and glory. But it's not through grasping. It's through finding out what you have to offer and then giving it truly, deeply, freely.
That's the greatest.
So that's the good news about 666.
Sarah Bethpew, that I always ask all my guests, let's say you were leaving the planet and you passed another UFO going the opposite direction. And they were like, we're going to go live among these crazy people. What do we need to know?
I think watch out, they're crazy.
What would you tell them if you could give them three bits of advice on what they need to know to fit in or whatever? You know, help, whatever you would tell them.
Go to the Hopi reservation first. And if you want to not be having to deal with a bunch of assholes or something. But I think that they say that there's so many different theories and things, and it's all, I don't grab onto any one of them and say, this is what it is, but some of them resonate. And one of them is that this planet is sort of like a nut house. It's an insane asylum for the criminally insane, or if our certain ideologies here would spread to the rest of the universe, it would just cause more misery and suffering. Right. And then if you looked into the Disclosure Project and stuff, a lot of the amalgamation of all of their different testimonies and stuff points to is this picture of them essentially tar wrangling up there, you know, taking like every time we try to start blow something up too much or whatever, they just
I know all about it. Yeah.
Yeah. We're like in a daycare.
We're young.
Yeah. We're babies.
babies. We have to be patient with babies.
What I would say to them is, I would say, be good to the babies.
Yeah.
Well, don't hurt the baby.
That would be perfect advice.
You could convince them to stop hurting the babies too. And that's another thing with the Equal Rights Amendment that got me passionately about, how do I say this? Male genital mutilation is not good. Okay. It's just as bad as female genital mutilation. And right now, the Equal Rights Amendment, it could possibly create a scenario where suddenly little baby boys have a right to not have parts of their body removed without their consent, because it's illegal to do it to females.
Yeah.
You know? So that's a big win for men that's going to do nothing but make life better for women.
Right? Sarah Beth, thank you so much for coming on. And please tell Natalie that, we're going to reach out to her anyway, but grateful to have her on. We have to, let's have another conversation about this and kind of finish whatever we didn't get into this time. But I appreciate your excitement, your enthusiasm, your determination for this. And I'm so grateful to have had you on and met you. Thank you.
And thank you for giving us the time and the platform.
Absolutely.
It's deeply appreciated.
I'm just getting started, and we're.
I look forward to the next chapter.
Absolutely, I'm going to have you guys back on for sure.
Okay, great.
Thanks again, Sarah.
All right, cheerio. Enjoy the rest of the day.
Take care. Cheers.
I think you are tapping into the most important amendment to the Constitution.
You have to be an activist to agree that it's bullshit that a man can walk around shirtless on a hot summer's day and a woman will get arrested for it.
How do we change the censorship laws in America?
Every day the media plays glorified images of violence yet discourage nudity. And so many of our heroes solve problems through killing and violence. We need new heroes, new stories, and we need them now.